All right, here we go. This is take three. Rolling.
This podcast is a little bit late this week because my computer broke late last week. I've had it for 8 years, and it's the thing that really, the number one tool for putting together the radio show and the podcast, and it broke, and I haven't had it for a few days. So it's now Monday night at 3 a.m., and I'm trying to figure out. I've had it all day, and I've just configured it to record audio, and it's not working quite right. It doesn't sound quite right. It's not working like usual. It's like an old friend who you're trying to, who doesn't recognize you anymore. It's kind of sad. So that's why the podcast is late. John Noreen is the guest this week. It's a pretty self-explanatory one. Just a small sliver of the music business that I like. Some interesting stuff is coming up. Check wfmu.org/Michael for the list. And enjoy this, and I hope your computer isn't broken. I will talk to you soon. Enjoy John Noreen. All right, there is the Rose Gardens Here's Today, and joining us, as I said earlier, on the telephone, co-writer of that song, I believe, John Noreen. Welcome to the program.
Well, thank you very much, Michael. I appreciate it.
Yeah, my pleasure. I'm thrilled to have you on. You know, I love the music business. I love the what was happening in the 1960s, and I love every part of the story. And the Rose Garden story is such a common part, and I love to hear people tell it. It's kind of some people describe the band as a one-hit wonder, but, you know, it seems like you were just a bunch of L.A. area kids. You got caught up in the music explosion that was happening. You formed a band. You got signed. You went through the music business ringer, and you broke up all in the matter of a few years. Is this something that has stayed, that all of those events happening, does that color your life for your whole life?
Well, it kind of does. I mean, that was something that I wanted to do when I started playing music. You know, I started playing guitar at 11, and then at 13, Jim and I and Bruce formed this band. And so it was like what I wanted to do. And it happened. And it kind of happened early on, so it's kind of been downhill from there, but not really. But that was kind of a goal, and I did it, and I feel really good about it. You know, it's something that not very many people get to do or experience, and a lot of people try, you know, so.
Sure, absolutely, yeah. Well, it's interesting that, you know, here we have this new reissue on Omnivore. It was kind of a deluxe package with, you know, great liner notes and extra tracks and stuff. And, you know, I'm sure throughout the years people have, you know, the record's gone out of print, but kids find it and new generations find it and people put it on compilations or things like that. It must be interesting to sort of have it come, sort of tap you on the shoulder every few years.
It is. You know, I've done lots of stuff. I've been in the music business, so I've stayed in the music business, I should say. And so I've done a bunch of stuff, but this is, it's still satisfying to me because, like I said, it was the first thing that you know, I did and I wanted to do, and I did it. So it's cool when it comes back up and somebody wants to, you know, somebody's interested in putting it on a compilation or like this album that came out. So I'm pretty happy.
Yeah,
I feel good about it.
So you guys, there was a band called The Blokes, basically a high school cover band pretty much, and that band sort of evolved into the Rose Garden, which now somebody described the Rose Garden sound as the Birds meets the Mamas and the Papas, and I know it sucks to kind of be reduced to a math equation, but first of all, those are both great bands, and it's a fairly apt comparison.
It,
you know, I'd say that, yeah.
Yeah, it is. I mean, we started out as a surf band, basically, doing instrumentals, and then when the Beatles came out, it was, you know, it was the game changer, and so we started, you know, changing our stuff around, our songs, and then the Birds came out, and we just kind of really identified with the folk rock thing, and because we also like folk music too, going back, you know, to 63, 62. And so when they came out and with their new sound, we loved it. And so we latched onto that and went with it.
It seems like you got interest of these two managers, Charlie Green and Brian Stone, who were managing Sonny and Cher in Buffalo Springfield and were pretty ambitious guys. How did they find you?
Well, when we added Diana to the band, she had a manager. He got us to be by a bunch of people. And some of those people, a couple of those people were Brian and Charlie. And they evidently liked what they heard, and they signed us and got us to deal with Atco Records, which was a big company.
Yeah, part of Atlantic, big company. It's a big deal. You start recording at Gold Star, where Phil Spector, Brian Wilson liked to work. This is right around 1966 or so. How old were you at that time?
At that time, 66, I was 16. And yeah, it was pretty funny.
It's just amazing. I mean, it's incredibly young.
Yeah, well, I was the youngest. Like I said, you know, I started early, and the guy, Jim and Bruce, were, you know, Bruce was 5 years older than I was, and Jim was 3 years older than I was. I was the little one.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. The photos in the booklet sort of show, because they show some pictures of the blokes, and it shows just how quickly style evolved during the 1960s, yeah, and music evolved with that. When did you get your first 12-string guitar?
I got that January of 66, and that was a big deal because, you know, the Birds came out 65 summer, somewhere around there. And so, like I said, we latched onto that sound and that style really quickly. And so I did everything I could do to get one of those 12 strings because that was the sound at that time.
Do you remember what it cost and do you still have it?
Yeah. Yeah, I still have it. It cost $600 then.
That's a fortune.
It was a fortune, and I had to beg my parents. I had to beg my parents big time.
One of the interesting things about the CD is Gene Clark's involvement, and there's two songs on the CD that Gene never recorded or released, I think, or the, you know, in any form. And there's a great story about and tell me if I've got this right. You guys are opening for him. He loves it. He joins you on stage and ends up in your bedroom showing you guys a song. And on the CD is a recording made in your bedroom of basically the first time you guys are kind of running through this Gene Clark song.
You know, obviously we were fans of his after he left the Birds. And so we went down to the Ash Grove down on Melrose in Hollywood. And we went to see him. And Bruce, on a break, went up to him and started talking to him and said, you know, you should hear our band, you know. And he goes, you know, yeah. And so Bruce kept hammering on him. And so he said, well, I tell you what, he says, I think Sunday here, there's like a, you know, what's now called open mic night, you know. And you come down here, I'll be here because I think I have to do a show that day. And come down there, I'll listen to you guys. So we were like ecstatic. And so down there and scared to death. And we got up on stage and we saw him back there in the back of the club. And we did one or two songs I really don't remember because it was so traumatizing to me that he was back there. And so I was like scared to death. And we played maybe Tambourine Man, I think. And then Jim says, you know, we're going to do a Feel a Whole Lot Better, a song called Feel a Whole Lot Better. And if Gene's in the back there, if he wants to come on up and join us, you're welcome to. And so he came running up on stage and a big grin and grabbed a tambourine and And we played, you know, a couple more songs. We played that song, and I think we did 8 Miles High and something else. And so that was that's how we got hooked up with him. And one time he called us and said that he had a song that he'd written for us, and but he didn't have a demo of it because he hadn't done that yet. But he'd like to play it for us. So he came over. We told him, asked him if he'd come out to the house, and he did, shockingly. And he came over, and in my bedroom, I had a tape recorder because I used to tape record everything that the band did. And I tape recorded him doing the song Till Today. And I tape recorded him doing it by himself. And then after we played it a few times, I turned on the machine again and recorded all of us singing the song together. And that's the one that's on the Rose Garden album. The song of just him doing Till Today is on the Gene Clark Sings for You album, which is another release on Omnivore.
Oh, yeah, that just came out.
Yeah.
The band went on a bunch of group tours, the kind of tours that were common at that time.
Right.
Playing with some amazing bands, including, you know, Chuck Berry and some of the kind of founders of rock and roll. Was that super fun for a teenage kid like yourself?
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. That was a lot of pressure, but it was a great time, and we got to see and meet so many people. Glenn Campbell. We played with Association, Neil Diamond, you know, all sorts of people. And we did a lot of TV shows, and we did American Bandstand and a bunch of local LA stuff that, there was one that they used to film on the beach called Groovy. And it was great. And they would have the whole thing out on like Santa Monica Beach, and that'd be where the show originated from, and it was a ball. That's a great time.
It sounds like it was groovy. So were you guys partiers? Were you guys? I mean, there were so many drugs around at that time. Was that part of your guys' lifestyle?
Maybe some of the older guys, but I couldn't get into a lot of places because of my age, and that was a real big bummer for me. If I wanted to go with everybody else, you know, when they went to the trip or, you know, the whiskey or something, you know, I couldn't go.
How fun.
I was just, yeah.
Well, maybe
so I was just
blessing in disguise, possibly. I don't know.
Perhaps.
So the record comes out and you're doing this touring, and it went to number 176 on the charts. You guys made another single, I believe, and then you basically broke up, and you know, it's just kind of that story. Like you said, you've stayed in the music business. You've played, I believe, with John Davison for 5 years. You moved to Nashville. You played in a polka band. You're obviously a guy who just wants to stay in music, and you've managed to do that. You know, it's funny because in some ways, you know, the Rose Garden is you know, not a huge success, but like you said, it was a success. And I read in the liner notes at the time when this was released, 200 singles were being released every single week, which is, you know, so to stack up against that kind of competition is pretty amazing. Next Plane to London, I believe, went to number 17 in 1967, right?
It did.
That's a
17 in
Nashville. Yeah, pretty big hit.
I would say so, and I'm pretty proud of it, and I feel blessed that we could do that and that we did it. It was just like you said, the numbers, the odds. It's like, you know, going to Vegas, you know, and to win a jackpot. You know, the odds are against you of it happening, but we had you know, a sound that they were willing to take a chance on. And if the draft hadn't been there, and because that's what pretty much broke us up, if that hadn't been there, we may have gone on longer because we had that second single they put out, but then they pulled it because, you know, two members of the band were gone. So
is everybody still friendly now? Is everyone still alive?
Yeah, everybody's still alive. The guys, I just recently, through this project, have had some contact with Diana. We haven't, I haven't spoken to her in absolutely, you know, since the Rose Garden. So that was kind of fun. The rest of the guys, we've stayed in close contact because we were friends before we were a band, really, you know, so it was a pretty special thing that happened to a bunch of friends.
Yeah, it's amazing that, and it's funny to speak to Diana, you know, after 50 years of not talking to somebody. It's but to have this
has it been that long,
but to have this shared thing between you that, you know, it's like a baby that, you know, unites you.
Yeah, it does. It's not any different than people that go to war, you know, that have veteran the same platoon or whatever, and they rely on each other, and they go through experiences together and hopefully come out on the other side, and they're lifelong friends, you know, and that's kind of what it was in the band.
Is the whole thing sort of bittersweet for you, or is it mostly positive?
No, it's very positive. I mean, I just feel blessed, like I said, that I was able to do that. You can't buy that for any amount of money.
Yeah, sure. Well, let's hear Next Plane to London from the Rose Garden. The CD is called The Trip Through the Garden, a Rose Garden collection. It's out on Omnivore and John Noreen. Thanks so much for joining us. Is there anything else I need to know about this recording or about this song or about... did you guys know when you were recording it that this would be the single, that this would be the song that you'd be remembered for?
No, not really. It was one of many that were given us, but it was the most accessible, if you will, you know, to the charts, and I'm surprised that it did well.
Yeah, John Noreen, thanks for joining us. Let's hear your big hit now, and good luck with this new project.
Thanks, Michael. I appreciate it.
Flight to London will be boarding in 5 minutes.
Next plane to London, leaving on runway number 5. Next plane to London, and I'm missing him, that baby of mine. Told him I was gonna be a star, but to do it I would have to go far away. But I'd come back someday and take him away. I'm on the next plane to London, leaving on runway number 5. Next plane to London, and I'm missing him, that baby of mine. Said that over here I wasn't in. Down in Hollywood I couldn't find a friend who would help me get in or listen to me. I'm on the next plane to London, leaving on runway number 5. Next plane to London, and I'm missing him, that baby of mine.
Your attention, please. The next flight to London is now on the final boarding stage. All passengers holding tickets, please proceed to the boarding area number 5.
Maybe over there I'll get a start. Chart. I'm on the next plane to London, leaving on runway number 5. Next plane to